Okay, so first I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this beautiful conference, many interesting talks, and also for the long stay here at KITP, which has been very inspiring. So I'm going to tell you about some work we have developed in our group related to quantum metrology of open dynamical systems. The title is provocative on purpose, okay, so how can you control the environment, but you are going to see. And in this talk, I'm going to apply these concepts to optical interferometry and quantum speed limit. And actually, conversations with Tommaso have been very useful to show me that actually our work is related to quantum control, in particular with respect to the quantum speed limit. Now, what I'm going to tell you is based on work with these people here. So these are students, professors. This is a postdoc. He was a former PhD student in our group. He's now a postdoc there. And I should say that that this guy here actually gave the most important contributions to this topic, okay? You know, without neglecting the contribution of the other people. But you know, this started in his PhD thesis. And in fact, I should say that I learned a lot with him. Now, so what's the idea of quantum metrology? So actually, it goes back even to classical metrology, or if you want, the problem of parameter estimation. And the idea is the following. You have a dynamical process, which is dependent on some parameter. And you want to estimate the value of this parameter. And of course, in this talk, I'll benefit from the previous talk by Klaus Mohmer, which you know, that was unplanned by me, but it turns out that my talk will be kind of complementary to his talk. So you probe this dynamical process with some probe, which you prepare in some initial state. You send the probe through the process to be investigated. Then you choose a suitable measurement, and you associate each experimental result, say J, with an estimation of the parameter. Now you need a merit quantifier, and this merit quantifier can be the standard deviation between the estimated value of X and the true value of X. And we will be dealing here with the so-called unbiased estimators, which are such that the average of the estimated value of X is equal to the true value of X. And furthermore, this is also true in a neighborhood of the true value. So this derivative should be equal to one. Okay, so this defines an unbiased estimator. Well, this field owes a lot to these three people here, Kramer, Rao, and Fisher. And in fact, Kramer and Rao derived a lower bound for unbiased estimators, which says that the standard deviation in the estimation of the parameter X is bounded below by this expression here, which depends on the number of repetitions of the experiment, and also on this function here, which is the Fisher information. And this function is related to the probability density. I'm just assuming that you have a continuum of possible experimental values. So this quantity here is the probability density of getting an experimental result, psi, if the value of the parameter is X. So Fisher showed that this inequality can actually be saturated, that is, it is possible to transform it into an equality when the number of trials goes to infinity, if you choose an appropriate estimator, which I call here XS. Okay, so that's the idea. Now, what about quantum parameter estimation? Well, the first part is precisely like I told you before. Prepared probe, measurement of the final state, an estimator. But there are new points to consider. First point, the states corresponding, quantum states corresponding to different values of the parameter to be estimated are not necessarily orthogonal to each other. So the precision in determination of a parameter depends actually on the distinguishability between quantum states corresponding to nearby values of the parameter. So that's the first point to consider. Second point, of course, measurement matters in quantum mechanics. And the third point is actually a question whether, you know, in spite, if you want, of this limitation here, which comes from the non-orthogonality of neighbor quantum states, is it possible to get a better precision for the same amount of resources by using special quantum states? And of course, to answer this question, I have to define what resources are. And these actually depends on the system. So they can be the number of atoms, for instance, that you use in atomic spectroscopy. It could be the number of photons in optical interferometry, or the average energy of a harmonic oscillator, for instance. Now, let me give you a very simple example from optical interferometry. And I'm going to revisit this theme at least two more times during this talk. So if you want to estimate a phase in an interferometer, the uncertainty in the estimation of the phase in the so-called standard limit is given by this expression, if you want, is bounded below by this expression, which depends on the average number of photons in the field you want to use to probe this phase. Now, you can derive very easily this kind of expression by looking at the scalar product between two coherent states corresponding to, the original phase and a small deviation from the original phase. So straightforward calculation, you find that if delta theta is small enough, this magnitude square is given by this expression here, which tells you that delta theta equal to 1 over square root of the average number of photons is the value of delta theta for which you can start to distinguish between these two coherent states. Okay, so a very simple concept. Now, is it possible to improve on this result? Yes, it is possible. And a possible method to increase the precision for the same average number of photons is to use the so-called noon states, which are proposed a long time ago by Dave Wineland. In fact, he mentioned them in answering a question by Ivan and by John Dowling more recently. And the idea is to use this kind of state here in the interferometer in which you have a superposition of two states with n photons in one branch and zero photons in the other. And it's easy to see that if you have a phase shift, this state gets transformed into this one. And if you calculate now again the scalar product between these two fields, magnitude squared, you find that it is equal to zero and delta theta is of the order of 1 over n. Okay? So immediately you see that for the same amount of resources, you get a smaller uncertainty here than here, okay? Where n here is the average number of photons in this state. So this is sometimes called the Heisenberg limit. And this shows that by using in this case, entanglement, you are able to actually increase the precision for the same average number of photons. Now, of course, I have not told you yet about this possibility of having different kinds of measurement in quantum mechanics, and this comes next. So again, we use the concept of Fisher information. Now, it is defined in the same way we defined before for the classical case, but now, of course, these conditional probabilities are given in terms of this expression here, that is, they are expressed in terms in general of POVMs, and you have to calculate this trace of rho of x is the state of the probe after it has undergone this dynamical process that depends on x. Now, of course, this corresponds to a given quantum measurement corresponding to some choice of POVM. The ultimate lower bound for this uncertainty in the estimation is obtained by optimizing this Fisher information over all quantum measurements. That is, you calculate the maximum of the Fisher information over all possible measurements, and this is the so-called quantum Fisher information. Now, so we get this expression, which is the quantum equivalent of the Kramer-Rao expression I showed you before. And again, we can show that this expression here, that this this bound, is asymptotically attainable when the number of repetition of the experiment goes to infinity. Now, there is a funny relation between the quantum Fisher information and the fidelity between two states. And I'm using here Bure's fidelity, which is the fidelity between two density matrices. Say, rho 2 corresponds to the true value of the parameter. Rho 1 corresponds to a neighbor value of the parameter. So this is the fidelity in this case. It reduces to the usual expression for pure states, just the magnitude squared of the scalar product between the two states. And one can show that if you expand this fidelity in terms of the difference between x and x true, the result is this one. So you see that there is a second order term that shows up here, and this second order term is proportional precisely to the quantum feature information. So you see that for the same value, for the same value of delta x, the larger the quantum feature information, the smaller will be the fidelity, which means that these states will be more distinguishable. Okay? So larger values of the quantum feature information favor precision. Okay? And that, of course, is consistent with this relation here. Okay? So you see immediately the relation between the precision in the measurement and the distinguishability between two quantum states. Okay. So now, for pure states, the situation is really very, very nice. If you take an initial state of the probe, which is a pure state, and assume that this evolution from the initial state to the final state is unitary, then it was shown by Hellstrom in 1976 that the quantum feature information can be expressed very simply in terms of, if you want, the generator of this transformation. Okay? And the quantum feature information is given by the variance of this operator here with respect to the initial state. If you want, this would be like the generator in the Heisenberg picture, sandwiched between two unitary operators. And this H is defined by that. So, for instance, if your unitary evolution is given by this expression here with O independent of X, then H would just coincide with this O here. So X could be, say, a displacement, a position displacement. In this case, O would be the momentum operator. And that would be telling me that the quantum feature information is just the variance of the momentum, and therefore the uncertainty in the displacement would be inversely proportional to the square root of the variance of the momentum. Now, don't mistake that for the Heisenberg uncertainty relations, okay? It's not, because X here is a parameter, the displacement is a parameter, it's not the position operator. And furthermore, you see well that when you use the Kramer-Rao relation, you have the number of repetitions of the experiment in the denominator, so you know, you can get arbitrary precision on this estimation of this parameter. So, in this case of unitary evolution, pure states, the uncertainty in the estimation of the parameter is bounded below by this very simple expression. And this expression tells you, actually, that one should maximize the variance in order to get better precision. That is, we should choose the initial state so that it maximizes the variance of this generator of translations in a generalized sense. Okay? Now, so let me go back again to optical interferometry, now with a more precise look. So we want to estimate a phase. We know that the number operator is the generator of phase displacements. So we know our recipe tells us that the quantum feature information should be proportional to the variance of the number operator in the upper arm, actually, because we are interested in estimating the phase in the upper arm. Now, the standard limit is obtained if we use coherent states as input states, because then this variance here is proportional to the average number of photons. It follows then automatically from the Kramer-Rao relation that delta theta is larger or equal than this expression here. Now, if I use the noon states, then the variance of the state is larger, just because you know you see that in the upper branch you can have either n or zero photons, so it's a larger variance. And in fact, the variance is proportional to n squared, and that implies that delta theta is larger or equal than 1 over n, which is the so-called Heisenberg limit. So you see the relation between the variance and the uncertainty in the estimation of the parameter. So now, I want to tell you about problems that arise with this formulation when you consider decoherence. So assume that you have losses, for instance, photon losses in the upper branch and the lower branch. Then you see the loss of a single photon transforms the noon state into a separable state. Okay, so if you lose a photon and you know if the photon has come from the upper branch, immediately you know that the state should be this one, that the n photons should have been in the upper branch. Okay? So you know, entanglement is destroyed by the emission of a single photon, by the loss of a single photon, and these states are useless for phase estimation, right? Because it's a product state. Doesn't work. Now, problem, there is no simple general analytic expression for the quantum Fischer information if you have losses, or you have other decoherence mechanisms. In some cases, you can calculate numerically. In fact, there are expressions for calculating that numerically. And a nice expression for that you can find in a paper by Brownstein and Caves. And there is also another paper which was actually very useful for us, which is a paper by Brownstein, Milburn, and Caves. Okay? It's a review in Annals of Physics. So, and I'm not going to give any more references because then people ask me, why not me? But, okay, so. It is somewhat related to one of your papers, I think. many papers. All papers. Okay, so the question then, how can we do it? How can we deal with this problem? So our idea was actually to extend the space, which, you know, for people in quantum information is something like a trivial thing to do, in purify the whole evolution. So you consider the evolution in this extended space, which includes some environments. And watch out, this environment does not have to be the natural environment. It's a mathematical environment, can be anything. With the only condition that if you trace out the environment, you get the non-unitary evolution of the small systems there. Okay, so that's the idea. Now, suppose now you have this extended space. The evolution here is unitary. Well, very good, because if the evolution is unitary, we have this nice closed analytical expressions, right? The quantum Fischer information for the whole thing depends on the variance of the generator of the displacement of the parameter. Okay? Now, suppose you calculate then the quantum Fischer information for the whole thing, and we call it this C of Q. Now, we are somewhat bound by this notation, which I don't like very much, but we introduced it in the first paper, so you know. So anyway, so this is the quantum Fischer information if you measure on the whole thing, system plus environment. Now, if you measure on the whole thing, of course, you get more information about the parameter than if you measured on the system alone. So immediately you have this inequality here, that the quantum Fischer information which we seek, the quantum information for the system, should be bounded, to have an upper bound, which is just the quantum Fischer information for the whole thing. And you should remark that here we are maximizing over all possible measurements on S plus E, while here we are maximizing over all possible measures on S alone. Okay? Now, so the physical meaning of this bound then is the information obtained about the parameter when S plus E is monitored. Now, of course, we are interested in getting as close as possible to the true quantum Fischer information of the system. And in order to do that, we have to try to minimize this quantum Fischer information for the whole thing. Now, we showed in this paper here that this bound is actually attainable. That means that there is always a purification such that this quantum Fischer information for the whole thing coincides with the quantum Fischer information for the system alone. What is the physical meaning of that? That means that if I monitor S plus E, I get the same information as if I monitored S. In other words, whatever information S plus E has on the parameter, it is redundant information with respect to the information S has. So the idea is then is to look for this environment. And of course, that looks like something very tough, because you should explore all possible environments. But there are some ways to simplify that. And and these ways have been discussed in this paper here. Now, in fact, you know, we learn in quantum information that if you have two different purifications of some density matrix, then there is always a unitary operator acting only on E, the environment, that connects these two purifications. So suppose we start with some initial purification here. And this is the evolution, if you want, or the transformation in this extended space that depends on the parameter, and that gives me this quantum Fischer information for the whole thing. So it's, in case X is time, this would be a Hamiltonian. Then any other purification can be written in this way, okay? A unitary evolution on E alone. And that justifies the title of my talk, okay? This is the control. So I'm actually applying a control on the environment, but please, this is a mathematical environment. So you know, experimentalists, you know, I'm telling you that because many times experimentalists tell me, you know, are you crazy? You want us to control? No, it's a mathematical experiment to get the correct expression. So this is the control on the environment. Now I define again this Hamiltonian between quotation marks corresponding to this unitary evolution. And we now see that this our quantum Fisher information for the whole thing depends only on this Hamiltonian. So we have to minimize this over all possible Hermitian operators that act on E. Okay? And in this paper, you'll find an equation for that. Okay, there is an equation which you can actually solve with successive approximations by variational methods. And I don't know if somebody knows about it, but I learned on this occasion. It's called Sylvester equation. It's an equation relating matrices, and you can solve that, okay, in principle, anyway, by successive approximation. So again, let me go back to optical interferometry and see how it works there. So I have this interferometer here, and for simplicity, I'll discuss here the case in which you have absorption of photons in the upper branch. So, and I will just choose an environment which corresponds to a beam splitter set, which is placed here, so that it will reflect part of the incoming light, and this will be the loss mechanism. And our environment will be this extra mold here. That's the mold that takes the photons away. So how do we minimize this quantum Fisher information for the whole thing? Well, we add another dispersive element in the environment. So this, again, is the control transformation. We are changing the phase of this mode. And theta prime for us is a variational parameter. So I calculate the quantum Fisher information of the whole thing and minimize it with respect to theta prime, hoping to get as close as possible to the true quantum Fisher information of the lossy interferometer. Okay, so that's the idea. And let me show you the results for states with well-defined photon number. We have more general results than that. We find actually a very simple expression for the using this approach for the uncertainty in the measurement of the phase theta. So you look at this expression, and then, you know, I was going to show you a graph, but it's so simple that I think it's easier to analyze this expression. If you take n small enough so that this term here is much smaller than 1, this just gives me the Heisenberg limit. It's 1 over n, okay, basically. On the other hand, if n is larger than this, so this term will dominate, you see that you have a 1 over square root of n dependence, because you'll have square root of n in the numerator, n in the denominator. So what we show is that, you know, this expression actually interpolates between the Heisenberg limit, which is obtained for small photon numbers, to the standard limit, which is unavoidably obtained when n is large enough, no matter how small are the photon losses. Okay? So we find then that for n sufficiently large, 1 over square root of n behavior is always reached. Now, our result that we get by the simple expedient of, you know, changing the phase of the environment is not exact. In fact, here is the square root of the ratio between the quantum Fisher information of the system and the quantum Fisher information for the whole thing minimized. This is numerically calculated for n up to 40, okay? Because when you go beyond that, the calculation becomes more and more complicated. And you see that, of course, C of Q should be larger than F of Q because it's an upper bound. And you see that we are always bounded by the 0.8 here, which means that we are actually quite close to the true quantum Fisher information. Okay, so it's a difference of 20%, say, in the uncertainties that we get. Now, so this is an example of this method. Another example which I want to tell you about is related to the quantum speed limit. And it goes back to this famous work by Mandelstam and Tam, in which they made sense of this expression here. That tells you that the product of the variance of the Hamiltonian of some system and the variance of the elapsed time, say, should satisfy this kind of relation. Okay? Now, this can be given a more precise formulation, and you can find it, for instance, in this paper here, on the geometry of quantum evolution. And what they derive is a Mandelstam relation with the condition that the final state of the system should get orthogonal to the first one. So then you can distinguish the two states for sure, and they calculate the time for that, and then they get this kind of relation. Now, question, how can we generalize this to non-unitary processes? Well, there are some problems that show up. First, you know, we should not expect the variance of the Hamiltonian to show up, because it's a non-unitary process. Second problem, the evolved state may not become orthogonal to the initial one, because it's a non-unitary process, so you know, you don't get there. So, and what we show in this paper here is that there is a generalization for the Mandelstam relation, which can be written in a way which is actually simple to understand. So, you know, this is generalization. This is the fidelity between rho zero and rho tau. And you see that the arccosine of the square root of this fidelity is bounded above by this integration from zero to tau of this square root of the quantum Fisher information. Now, this is actually the so-called Bure's length of a geodesic in the space of mixed states. Okay, and that we found that in a paper by Ullmann in 1992. Actually, after having got this result, we were somewhat frustrated, but it is there. Okay, it is there. Okay, now. This is so-called Bure's length of the actual path followed by the state of the system. So for pure states, for pure states, this is the so-called Fubini study metric, okay? But here we have the generalization for mixed states, okay? So it's the actual path followed by the system. And what is this telling us is that the actual path followed by the system is in general larger than the geodesic path between the initial and the final state. Just that, okay? Now, you see here the square root of the quantum Fisher information, and if you remember yet this expansion of the fidelity in terms of delta x, remember the quantum Fisher information was multiplying the square root of the square of delta x. So you see that the square root of the quantum Fisher information plays the role of a speed. And indeed, you see the speed here. Integrated from zero to tau. Okay, so that's the meaning, geometric meaning, if you want, of this expression. Now, of course, this bound is attainable. It's sufficient to find an evolution that moves the system along a geodesic in space state. And we can look at some special case in which you consider unitary evolution and a time-independent Hamiltonian and orthogonal states at the end. And then it's easy to see that, you know, if the states are orthogonal, the fidelity goes to zero. Arccosine zero is pi over two. I can replace the quantum Fisher information by the variance of the Hamiltonian. And from this expression, I immediately get this expression here, which is a Mandelstam term expression. Okay, so it is a special case of that. Now, I should say that, you know, in the same issue of PRL and published back to back, there was a paper published by the group of Plenio and Huelga on the same subject, but using some different methods to get bounds, okay, for this minimum time, say, for the states to become distinguishable from each other. You see also that here I avoid the condition that the two states should be orthogonal. So the generalization necessarily implies some fidelity here because they may not become orthogonal. So I have to consider the general case. Now, so I'm almost finishing, but I just want to give you an example. And so you see, that's our bound. But of course, this bound is, in general, very difficult to solve because you need to know the quantum Fisher information for the system. But again, we can use the same trick. We know that this can be bounded by this purification. So I purify the evolution. I find the corresponding Hamiltonian. And then I do these evolutions, or these extra evolutions in the environment, and try to minimize C of Q with respect to that. So let me give a very simple example, and I'll finish with that. Now, suppose we consider the phasing channel, okay? Now, the phasing channel corresponds to this unitary map. You see, it's telling me that if the system is in the zero state and the environment is in the zero state, after some evolution, they become this state here. You see, the state of the system remains the same because it's a dephasing, so there is no transition of the system. And if the system is in state one and the environment is initially in the state zero, you get this expression here. So the state of the environment changes, but not the state of the system. And this P of t is given by this expression here. So you see that for t equal to zero, you just get the first term here and here, because you know, for t equal to zero, p becomes one. On the other hand, when t goes to infinity, I get one over square root of two here and here. So you get this superposition of the two states, which means for the system that there is no phase at all. Okay, if you look at the reduced density matrix of the system. Now, the unitary evolution corresponding to this map here can be easily seen to be this one. This is the sigma z operator for the system, and this is sigma y operator for the environment. And this theta is given in terms of this p of t by this expression here. Now, of course, as I told you before, I have the possibility of this more general unitary evolution. And in this case, I know what is the more general unitary evolution because I'm dealing with a single spin. So, you know, the most general evolution should have some Hamiltonian, which is a combination of the three Pauli matrices. And these coefficients here are variational parameters. So I calculate C of Q, and I minimize with respect to these parameters, and then I have a result which should be saturable, because, you know, that's all I can do. So let me show you some special case. You can find the more general expression in our paper. So suppose we have omega zero equal to zero, so two degenerate states, which are submitted to dephasing. Then we get that the distance, remember this distance is the arccosine of the square root of the fidelity. It's the distance along a geodesic. It's bounded above by this expression here. And from that we can find a bound for this time of separation of the states. Now you see immediately from here that if the variance of z is equal to zero, there is no evolution. The distance is equal to zero. That saturates this relation in a trivial way, because if you have an eigenstate of z for the phasing, you don't have any evolution. Yeah. On the other hand, if it also tells us this expression here, that the maximum distance between the states is given by this expression, because you see when tau goes to infinity, this should be arccosine zero, which is pi over two, so we get just this expression here. So it depends on the square root of the variance. Now, also, for pure states, if you set delta z square equal to one, the bound is saturated. Now, what does it mean to write that down? That means that the initial state is on the equator of the Bloch sphere, okay? Maximum variance of sigma z. So it's a state like zero plus one. And this state evolves along a geodesic of Bloch sphere. In other words, you start with a state with maximum coherence like this one, and because of the phasing, it's transformed into this mixed state, which is just a multiple of the identity. Geometrically, this means that our state, you know, starts here and goes to the center of the Bloch sphere, and that's a geodesic between the initial and the final state. Okay, so that's the idea. Now, I'm not going to show you the application of this to a case in which I have n qubits. That's the next slide, but you'll be able to see that in the web page. And I'll go straight to the summary. So we have here a general framework for the estimation of parameters in noisy systems based on the expression of the quantum Fischer information for a purified evolution, and also the control of the environment so as to minimize the quantum Fischer information of S plus E. This has allowed an analytical calculation of some very good bounds on the limits of estimation. I have just shown two examples, but we have obtained also bounds for optical interferometry with dephasing, atomic spectroscopy, of course, all the bounds for the minimum evolution time of open system for other kinds of channel, and also for force estimation, or for force applying, for instance, on a damped harmonic oscillator, where, again, we can get an exact result. And I'll just finish with an old picture of our group. Some people have left, all others have come, but anyway, we have not had time to get a new picture. The color code is green for students. Oops, what happened? Did you do that, the chairman? No? Okay. Yes? So that's it. So green for students, blue for postdocs, and red for professors. And I should point out here the people involved in this research. Huine Matos Filho, Nissim Zaguri, professors, and then the students, Bruno Escher, who is the champion here, the guy who did his first thesis on the subject, and we learned a lot from him, and he's now a postdoc, and also the students Camille Lombard and Marcio Taddei, who have also given very strong contributions to this subject. Thank you very much.
In the first part of the talk, in trying to find the quantum Fisher information in dissipative context. So although this is not the physical environment and you're not going to actually control this environment, what I didn't understand is, does this ultimately tell you what POVM you want to do on the environment, and can you do it to achieve? Okay.
Yes. So in fact, you see, yeah, good. So this result is actually for the best measurement you can do. In some cases, yes. Not always. Okay, we get this quantum Fisher information independently of the measure, but that's of the best measurement. In some cases, we can determine what is the best measurement, and also what is the best initial state. Because you see, this result, the bounds we get, are independent of the initial state, which is interesting. Okay, so, you know, when you cannot determine the initial state, you know, we consider it in an optimistic way a challenge for experimentalists, you know, try to reach our bound, you know, but in not all cases we can determine what's the best initial state and what's the best measurement. In some cases we can. Yeah, it is. Okay, no, for our minimum, very good. So for our minimization, no. Okay, so we get that the phase, the minimum phase is different from the other one we had. Okay, we get a different result for this variational parameter, but the final result is the same. Okay, so
Looking at this case of dissipation and interferometry, So you mentioned that this is non-constructive. You don't know what the optimal states would be that would reach these bounds. But I just wanted to mention as a point of information, in work that predates yours that we did at NASA, we were able to show the asymptotic behavior going to the shot noise limit, but also to find the optimal state that saturates that bound using a different technique.
Yeah, so yeah, I know that work. Plus, there are lots of other works also which I have not mentioned, but you can find them in our papers. And I know that. I think I know if it's.
Yeah, but the point was that we found
that
the optimal.
One of the square root of n shows up as an asymptotic limit. And then you have actual state there.
We were able to find the state that saturates that bound.
Right. So in that case, you can actually do that in this asymptotic region, right? But of course, here we have this expression that interpolates, you know, between small photon numbers and large photon numbers. And actually, for the case of finite photon numbers, that I consider that, we have an expression for the state. But of course, it's an expression for our approximation, because you see, you don't have the exact bound. But yeah.
You can show how it starts as a noon state and then goes through a bifurcation. You get other elements appearing, some at the origin, depending on where the losses are. And then these components move around and grow, and then the number of discrete components increases until you have like a continuum. So you can, I mean, we showed that in the paper as well.
I know that. Very good. Yeah.
So first, very beautiful, very elegant. And second, I have a general question. lots has been looked at in terms of distance between states, pure and mixed, and for instance, we have been learning about bounds when the states reach maximum distinguishability and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Now that we have looked more at metrics on operator space, for instance, to talk about how distant are two operators, mm-hmm. unitary or channels. Mm-hmm. Have you thought whether there is anything useful in terms of asking about distinguishability?
Of operators?
Yeah.
Yeah. Honest answer, no, I have not thought about that. Okay. Which might be interesting, but you know, I have not thought about it. Yeah, looks interesting.
I had a question about how you choose your dilation. Can you tell in advance what a good dilation is? Or?
Yeah, no. Actually, you see, in principle, we have this equation, which I mentioned in this paper that came out recently, that right. allows you to look for successive approximation. But you have to start with some approximation and then go on from that. And this initial choice is motivated, in our case, by physical insight, you know, like, you know, what do we want to do? We want to erase the non-redundant information in S plus E. Okay? Now, we want information about the phase. You know, and this information shows up not necessarily just in the environment, but in the correlations between system and environment in a non-redundant way. So we thought, well, how to reduce that, you know, make a phase transformation in the environment and try to minimize the whole thing. So that's physically inspired in this sense, okay? Now for this quantum speed limit, you know, in the example I showed you, you don't even need physical motivation because there is only one possibility of making this general transformation if you have just one spin. Now, then we consider also the case of n spins. And, you know, we looked at that and, okay, it's a nightmare, right? Because you have many other parameters, but then, you know, you can try small h, remember the Hamiltonian of this additional transformation, which is a symmetric contribution, that's the sum of all spin operators. So it's alpha sum of xi plus beta sum of yi plus gamma sum of zi. That is, we treat all spin operators in the same way. And so we still have three parameters. We can minimize that. And if we do that, we find a bound that can actually be attained. Guess by what kind of state? GHZ states, of course, because they are the symmetric states. Okay, so you know, you have to have some physical inspiration to start the process, and then you can add corrections.
All right, if there are no more questions, let's thank our speaker one more time. The next speaker is Paola Capellaro.